reconvene for the administrative portion of our meeting. I believe Mr. Hageman had to leave quickly. If he comes back and has some questions, we'll probably just put the administrative issues on hold and take his questions so we don't hold him up till the end of the meeting.
He might have been done.
Maybe he was done. I don't know. Yeah. I thought he had left some papers.
Those were our papers, I think.
Were they? Okay. Well, anyway, we have two items on the consent portion of the meeting, and I would move passage of those.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, next is discussion matters, and the first thing on the list is the Consumer Affairs Year-End Report for 2017, and I'll turn it over to Stacy.
All right. You guys should have all been provided a copy of the statistics. I don't know if you have a chance to look at them, but we've been doing this yearly since I started, just doing a summary of the year, and then a news release and correspondence. So I have been working with Commissioner Crotchis on a draft news release that I think is ready to send to you guys. So you'll see that coming, and we'll get that released when we have everybody's comments. But the first page on the summary is, or the first page is the summary. So that's probably the most useful page to look at. And then if you want to dive into the actual statistics on everything, it's following that. But I did keep in the four-year comparison since I started, so these are consistent with my record-keeping since I started in 2014. The first chart shows everything, including informal complaints, public input. There wasn't anything that stuck out too much. You'll notice the pipeline category dropped from last year. That is just because of Dakota Access. So Dakota Access obviously had a lot of public input last year. So that would be the main reason that that dropped from 113 down to 35. Other than that, the numbers there were pretty consistent. And I'll let you guys ask whatever questions you have for me after we go through this. The second chart breaks out just the informal complaints. So this is not public input. It's just complaints for the regulated entities. Once again, numbers were fairly consistent with the exception of CenturyLink. Complaints did increase from 60 to 88 from last year. So they had a, in my opinion, significant jump again. The other three companies were fairly consistent with what they've had all the other years, with MDU at 12, Excel at 31, and Otter Tail at 13.
And that CenturyLink is really disappointing because they were making this $2 million investment and I think have completed that, and this, we're getting more complaints. I mean, they're almost at the peak of what they were before that infrastructure was done. What do they say?
They actually have not completed the infrastructure in the Bellfield area, and that's, you know, something that we could talk about at another time if you want, but I still get complaints out of that area that the settlement focused on, but it's far more widespread than that. Mm-hmm. So the infrastructure improvements that they did in those areas probably have helped those areas, but the problem is
bigger,
way bigger. Yeah.
Well, and I think some of the complaints that we got this year, it doesn't justify this, I think, very disappointing number. But some of the complaints this year, I believe, related to the company who was putting in the infrastructure causing damage to other people's infrastructure there. And so some of it had to do with that construction project, too, I believe.
Some. There, for some reason, the contractors they had working for them, we're cutting lines while they were doing the work and taking phone service out. But if you look back in the statistics, the majority of the complaints still deal around outages and the length of the outages. Very lengthy, some of them. We're talking months and months. Gosh. For some of them.
And that is incredibly disconcerting when you think that
you know, if it's a household and that's they're reliant on their landline for emergency services, that's just an incredible period of time.
Well, Randy, this is your portfolio, but I'd certainly think that it's probably time to have them come in again and go through this, or at least have Stacy go through.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I'm more than willing, if you guys want to set up a work session or something at some time, to go through just those specific complaints and outline what we're seeing, if you guys are interested in that detail.
Well, I think we should, because...
And I think it might be good to, like I mentioned, they did not finish the work from the settlement agreement. And I've
that settlement was the end of the calendar year 7th.
It was, but the wording gives them some flexibility when we've looked at it. And we could go over that too, but it says something about to the best of their ability they would finish the work. So
I think we should set up a work session. Have you heard from them when they plan to? I mean, is there an explanation? They just
didn't get it done. have a recurring theme of not enough techs and not being able to find workers to do the work.
And they're going to start up again this spring, or?
Yeah.
Well, I'd be interested in a work session. If you don't want to have one, Randy, then I can just meet separately with Stacy and do it that way.
We can just put this on scheduling and set one up.
Sure. Yeah, I do have a spreadsheet of just the CenturyLink complaints that I prepared, so I can share that with you at that work session, and you'll be able to see the 88 complaints and specifically what they entailed and the length of the outages and so forth. So that'll be helpful for you guys probably if you want to see that.
I just made that number 8 on our scheduling.
Okay. Did you guys have any questions about any other areas of the report? Or like I said, nothing else jumped out at me, but maybe something does to you. I don't.
Was there something in the pipelines that I was trying to look when I was going through this the other day? Even the 35, like what? Mm-hmm. Where those
would most likely be all public input for a case. So if you go back into, so it'd be like page 4 on the handout that I gave you, and you'll see pipeline 35 there. So you have this chart, and then there's just like this heading, and then there's page 1. And then 2, it's public input. So public input for PU 14842, that was still Dakota Access. So 32 of them were Dakota Access. And then whatever 16753 was and 1797. And then, so.
I think that's really interesting.
They're public input.
If you take Dakota Access out, 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dakota Access was still, we still had 32 of them in 2017, yeah.
And the gas is the rate case, I'm assuming.
Input for 17295, yeah. I don't remember what.
That's the rate case.
Is that the rate case? Okay.
Look at the railroad, 408 to 10. That's amazing.
When did that program, I was going to ask, when did that, the rail program begin?
Well, that wasn't just, well, that was partially people were complaining about the safety issues, but there was a lot of service issues that year related to in 2014 related
lack
to winter weather.
Cars, that type of thing.
A lot of those were, though, it was right after the Castleton derailment and explosion, we had some petitions started and so forth for rail safety stuff.
Oh, that's what it was, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why that number, that's why I have that little star there denoting that, because... That's why that was so huge.
It does appear, though, this definitely coincides with the rail program.
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact.
The timing's spot on.
Yeah.
Another one that may coincide with something timing-wise, but I don't know if it one causes it, if it's a cause and effect or what, but that's the point of my question. XLNSP complaints have gone down. It's not huge numbers, but a pretty nice consistent drop for these 4 years. And so we wouldn't have the numbers from the previous commission, when they did some things, some penalties and requiring an engineer down in the Fargo area and the various things they did in about 2011 or 2012. But do we think that this is a continual effect of the increased efforts toward cutting that down? And out of these a couple dozen complaints, is it predominantly in the Fargo area as opposed to Grand Forks and Minot, or is it primarily in those other towns as opposed to Fargo, where it seemed like more of that effort was? Or
I don't know if I could comment on the outages and whether that affect. I can say that I do not get calls regarding outages hardly ever.
You could look back just from now until 2014 and see, because in the breakdown there's billing disconnect.
Right. I was going to say the majority of calls I get are disconnect related.
Okay. It would be interesting if that was true in 2014, though, too.
Yeah, and when I first started, you can look back in the system and get those numbers from before me. The problem is when I was trying to compare them, they weren't comparing. Like, they were all over the place, and it's just a matter of how you put things into the system and consistency. And so I think I remember talking with Commissioner Fedorchuk at the time that we would just kind of start with me and be consistent from now on, because when I was trying to compare it before, it wasn't comparing. Like, the numbers were nowhere near each other, and it just depended on how the person before me was using the system and how they were recording things and what categories and so forth. So, but you can go in there and look. But yeah, the majority of complaints that I get for all of the electric utilities are around disconnects.
Yeah, and I see now I've paged back. I see what you're saying, that it's mostly.
And once again, with those, it's not that the company is doing anything wrong. It's just people get disconnected, they get mad, and they call us, and then we help to work it out. So those are sometimes a little misleading, I think, because the companies aren't doing anything wrong. I've never found that the company's not following the disconnect laws and rules. We just help as a medium there.
It might be worthwhile, since we've got the data, just to look at what, in 2014, the quality of service complaints, which I'm sure is where you would have put people complaining about a outage, if those were, you know, a significant portion of their total at all in 2014 when they had the highest, because that would then reflect that the changes and the investments being made are resulting in a noticeable decline in complaints.
Yeah, I could certainly look at that.
You know, they certainly suggest to us that, especially those switches and the vegetation trimming, has made a big difference. So, I think you got a good point. If we can just look at 14, what the outage complaint is.
Yeah, I can certainly look at that.
Very good. Thanks for being so diligent in tracking this stuff and collecting it so we can look at it and analyze what's going on, Stacy. It's really a helpful tool.
Great. Thank you. And like I said, I will send you guys the draft news release probably this afternoon yet, and we'll put that out whenever we get it ready.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
We will move to number two then, the topsoil segregation requirements. Jerry Lean. Well, Jerry, you've got a busy rest of the morning here.
We had a request from one of the wind projects, New Frontier, that a couple of things they were asking about was, first of all, in building roads, our certification document talks about removing the topsoil up to a depth of 12 inches or the depth of cultivation and segregating that. So they only want to go down 4 inches for the roads, and then they would mix a concrete into the topsoil at that point, and that would become the road base. And then they'll add gravel on top of that. And they want some assurance that that is acceptable under the topsoil segregation conditions.
So during
this is New Frontier. It's for the New Frontier Wind Project, Capital Power.
So during the eventual removal of the concrete, is that several inches thick? Do you know?
It's a 5%. All I know is it's a 5% mixture into that layer of, after you go down 4 inches into the topsoil there.
So it's actually going to, removal would take out whatever topsoil it's mixed with eventually at some point?
Eventually is after the project is being reclaimed.
Right.
So
why would we,
for the life of the project.
That doesn't seem like a good thing for a landowner to let's just say it mixes with several inches of topsoil. And I don't understand exactly how much is impacted, but it seems like concrete's not going to separate out from topsoil when you finally remove it.
If they redo the road during reclamation, they would have to remove the road bed.
And that's going to take some topsoil that the concrete's mixed with.
So the question is, do you want to make them go down 12 inches and this topsoil is going to, what are you going to do with it for 20 years? I mean, it's not going to be the same topsoil when you reclaim the project. It's going to have to come up and they'll have to make the roadbed deeper down to the 12 inches. I don't know what they'll put in it if they can't do their concrete into the topsoil, but they'd have to put something different for the roadbed.
Wasn't the whole point of reclamation to restore to its natural condition? This would make that impossible.
I don't think so.
How do you separate out the topsoil that's going to be mixed with the concrete?
You dig it up, haul it away.
With some of the topsoil?
Well, if you think about it with the roadbed, you're going to go down. If you're going down 12 inches, what are you going to do with that topsoil now? I mean, you're not going to have it 20 years. You're going to have to bring in some different topsoil when you take that roadbed out.
Why? You store it. You either make a pile someplace.
Stockpile it.
Or you blend it out into the ditches. In places where it's usually useful, and reseed it and keep track of where that is so that later on when it's time for reclamation, you go and uproot that again and spread it back out over the whole area.
A lot of times what happens is the landowner gets the topsoil and does what he wants with it. Areas on his land that he wants to spread the topsoil or something, but The question is, do they need to go down the full 12 inches? The certification says up to 12 inches. They only want to take 4.
Well, that's implied. Someone will have to correct me, but isn't it implied when we say up to a depth of 12 inches that recognizes that topsoil might be 6 inches in some spot, it might be 7, it might be 8 inches, maybe it's 3 or 4 on a knoll, whatever it is, that they're taking the proper steps and care to remove the topsoil, setting it aside, putting it somewhere where it can go back onto where that road was at some point in time when the restoration occurs.
I'm sure that's why they're asking.
How are other companies, have they done this?
It hasn't come up.
So they're doing it the way we're expecting?
I don't really know. It hasn't come up. I'm guessing that they might have interpreted that they're only taking 4 inches of it. So that's all that they segregate. I don't know, though.
I think one of our problems is that we don't have a strict enough inspection regime to be catching things. That's a concern I have. But I will say this. If they're segregating topsoil and then just giving it away for people to go spread somewhere where they'd like to have some topsoil, that's a big mistake by the company because they are supposed to be saving that. And like I say, one way to save it is have a few stockpiles, and you're going to have to seed them so that they don't blow and such. Take care of it. Or you can find places along your project somewhere in a ditch or around a pad or something like that. And if it's a place where there's 6 inches of topsoil currently, you know, maybe you spread it 2 or 3 feet around there and keep track of that, that is where you're storing X number of yards of topsoil. And then someday when it's time to upgrade the road and clean it up, or the pad, or the Met Tower, or whatever it is that needs to be reclaimed, you go back to those places and take some of the topsoil out and spread it back out again. They need to be segregating and saving this material. Otherwise, we're going to have completely unsuccessful reclamation efforts someday.
We do have the inspectors going out and inspecting, even on the wind farms, prior to construction, so that they know how to do it. And so, I mean, I think that I would hope that if there was something awry with what our expectations are and what's happening on the ground, our inspectors would be catching that on the front end.
You have the same issue with a substation. You take the topsoil off and you put in a gravel base, and that's going to stay that way for the life of the substation. The topsoil, then, what do you do with it? The landowner will usually have a use for it and wants it.
Well, we've asked these questions in hearings, and usually they say they're spreading it in with the soil nearby. And then when we ask where you're going to get your topsoil from for reclamation, they'll say, we'll use that, and we may have to fill in with other topsoil that we buy.
They haul some topsoil onto the site
and
put in. But as far as piling it somewhere, I think that the landowner should have some say in whether or not he has a pile of dirt on his land when he's done. I mean,
well, but it's that really isn't our concern. Our concern is they've got to have it to reclaim.
He'd rather spread it over there where he's got a low area. It seems like he should be able to do that.
But our responsibility is that we need to make sure for future generations that the company has access to that topsoil when they need it back again.
You know, to think that you're going to put the same topsoil back in the same place might not be realistic after 20, 30, 40 years.
It's expected from other energy facilities and energy operations. They don't get a pass.
Well, they would.
Look at our reclamation on the coal side. I don't think they can go in and say, well, we took out 7 inches of topsoil, but we're only going to put 4 back.
Well, that's not what they're saying.
No, but to me, if they're going to be mixing concrete into the, you know, at that 4-inch depth, they're going to have topsoil in it. And there's just, I can't even think of a way how you would separate that out.
The bottom line for me is this topsoil is a valuable natural resource. If up to a foot of it, they need to be saving. If it's 4 inches thick, if it's 8 inches thick, if it's a foot thick, that's how much they need to be saving and segregating, not mixing into the concrete.
So I think I'm hearing that you want the topsoil removed all the way to the 12 inches.
If there's 12 inches.
If it's topsoil. Yep. Most places on these hilltops are not going to have 12 inches of topsoil.
Okay.
Well, just the fact that it's defined topsoil.
We have two more.
That's something to maybe think about, how topsoil is defined. To me, it's pretty straight simple. It's the, or, you know, the fertile organic soil at the top, but we might want to take a look at exactly how that's defined so that it's just crystal clear this is topsoil versus subsoil.
We have two more issues brought up. Well, one more in this instance, and that is the running of a ditch witch. A ditch witch digs a trench about a foot wide.
It
digs it like this all the way down. And then coming behind the ditch witch is a cable layer. And then coming behind that is a fillet back in the hole. And
the ditch witch doesn't make segregating the topsoil practical. So you end up with a foot wide trench.
Do it first. Pull off the topsoil and then use the ditch witch.
That's kind of the thing, but if you pull off the topsoil first, really, I think you're using a backhoe or something coming through there to do that. It adds to the whole advantage of using the, or subtracts from the whole advantages of using the ditch witch. The ditch witch.
Where are they using the ditch witch? Just on the roads?
For laying collector cables.
All over the place?
It's usually beside an access road, but it could be under them, but yeah. Wherever they need to lay them.
To me, they know what our standards are, so follow our standards.
So.
And if you can't use a certain equipment because that doesn't allow you to follow the standards, then you can't use that equipment. I mean,
you might make more impact on the land by using a different method than the ditch witch. That's the advantage of the ditch witch, is it gives you a narrow trench. And
it's their responsibility to do it right. And it's really clear that you separate the topsoil up to a depth of 12 inches. It has to be placed somewhere where it can be recovered, and then go back on any of the areas of disturbance. Isn't that pretty clear?
Okay.
You know, it may be something that we need to have a work session, bring somebody in at some point, because I will say this from just the landowner perspective. I've had some cables and stuff go in that didn't have anything to do, weren't with regulated companies. And the ditch, which method, you know, it's narrow. And, yeah, you can see that little track going through the ground. But as opposed to coming in with a scraper or a dozer or something and plowing up a wide area of topsoil so you can segregate it and then putting in your cable and then bringing everything back and the whole receding, it's the ditch witch's method has been fairly non-evasive. Maybe it's something that should be deemed acceptable.
I'm open to that. I've heard from some of the Western folks that they would prefer to do this narrow, but I don't know how deep the ditch witch can go. So rather than making a decision right now on that, on this case, let's talk about it from a broader standpoint.
What if we move it down to scheduling and do an informal hearing and let whoever wants to speak, speak? I think the companies have some experts on their ditch witches and their so forth to, or at least hook them up by phone and they can.
Well, we know who's going to show up for that, the ones that want to save money. Most of your ag producers and soil conservationists and stuff aren't probably following our hearing process about this. I think it would be better to do some background work, contact some extension agency people or some soil conservation people and see if there's some best practices out there for the differences between ditch witching as opposed to taking a bigger path and going through the topsoil segregation. I'm guessing soil conservation teams have some kind of guidances on that.
Daryl Dukert is the one that has talked to me about that, about this whole thing too, and so he's got some experience that might be valuable as a landowner to pull in for that as well.
I think staff just needs to do some background work and not finding out what the companies want, but soil conservation.
Sure.
What best practices are.
And while we're at it, I had one other issue that's come up over the period of time here, and that is when you install a utility pole, you do that with an auger. So you auger down, and then you put the pole in the hole and fill the dirt back in around the, and cement in around the pole. Is there a need to segregate topsoil when you're augering? You end up with a right around the pole, an area maybe that wide or so, that the hole is bigger than the pole.
Sounds like the exact same thing. I've thought about that too, and I think you'll get the same answer from the same people.
Okay. So maybe, Julie, you could email me who that person was that you were talking about?
Yep. Okay. Yep, I sure can.
Thank you.
I might have his.
So I think that's
it. But really, for a record, having it come from, like, the Soil Conservation Office would probably be better than from one individual. But he might be part of his county soil conservation team.
I'm yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say he would be the sole source of information, but just as an, as somebody.
Started, yeah.
Well, and an additional one in addition to the county folks, soil folks, because it sounded to me in visiting with him that he's done a little bit of work on it as well. He's a county commissioner. Is it Dunn or Dunn County?
I think another.
Because the exact same argument can be made with laying in pipelines. You know, if you didn't bother saving the topsoil, you don't have to dig such a wide trench. So
in a way, but the pipeline isn't really going in with a ditch wedge.
No, but it's the same argument. You could do a much smaller trench if you didn't bother saving topsoil.
You know, one other consideration, not to further complicate matters, but yeah, at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, I think, and that is to make sure things are returned to their natural state or as close as possible. There's a difference to me, and I say this from a landowner perspective, if something is going across tillable land versus native prairie. A native prairie, I would absolutely agree with what you said, Randy. You can cause far more damage to the grass by not, for example, using a ditch wedge, because that grass is just never the same. But then on tillable, it might be a little different story. But just something to keep in mind.
So I'll bring it back after I talk to SCS.
Next era decommissioning filings.
That's on, just to let you know that we've received decommissioning plans from Next Era facilities. They have quite a few wind farms. I think about 14 of them in the state are theirs. And they filed financial assurances for those that need it that are over 10 years. And that's in the form of a parent guarantee. And they believe is in compliance with the rules that allow for parent guarantees based on what their Moody's rating are and what their net worth is and stuff like that. So just letting you know that's here. Staff will continue to review those.
I think we should do an informal on those, shouldn't we? Like we have on other decommissioning plan. So we bring it, they talk through it and we ask them questions. And
do you want to do an informal just on all of them at once? Or
seems like that would be the most efficient if it's possible.
Yeah.
On all the Next Era projects.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be, you know, next week or anything. It could be down the road a bit if you guys need some time to pour through their filings.
Sure.
I think, too, that would be good because just to be covering our own responsibilities. And I assume that this is what you're talking about when you say that staff is continuing to investigate these. But, you know, we need to have on a record of the evidence that shows that they meet those standards, not just them saying we do. But I don't know exactly how you gather that, but something that shows that they have that bond rating as of whatever the date it was calculated and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So do you want to set that for scheduling, or does it need more time?
Let's give it a little bit more time so I can talk with the company and see with what is good for them for dates and stuff like that.
Okay, too. So we'll deal with that one scheduling next time.
Okay.
Okay, then do any of these eight items need to come first, or can we just go 1 through 8?
1 through 8 is good for me.
Not seeing anything.
Well, sometimes I think it's better to do the formal hearings so that we get those and then we don't clutter it up with other things like directors' meetings and budget updates and that sort of stuff.
Okay, am I just seeing the one, number 5?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump to that one. Number 5, the NSP ADP.
I had a suggested date from the parties of sometime during the week of March 19th.
That week looks good for me. I don't have any big conflicts.
It's good for me.
We have the RTF formal hearing potentially runs the previous week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so we probably don't want to pick Monday for another hearing.
When is that?
March, the week before. I've got it on my calendar, March 9th, 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Okay, and
we're in the week of the 19th.
He's talking about the 19th through the 23rd.
So we're a week later.
Oh, a week later. I'm sorry.
Do they need 1 day, a half day, 2 days?
Yeah, I went back too far.
You know, I hope 1 day I'll do it. But I know it could go 2, I guess. What do you think?
That week works for me. Let me suggest the 20th.
The 20th? Could we...
Oh, no. Let me suggest the 21st. I remember about the 20th now.
Okay.
It's fine.
It's fine with me.
Nine o'clock
work, Jerry, you think?
Sure.
Okay.
Again, just 1 day, or do you want
to...
Okay. Then jump back up to the... since our calendars are now in March anyway, the rescheduling, the March 27th directors meeting and the 28th commission meeting. Did the conflict last all week, or like, is it a matter of
that's
going to the 29th and 30th?
No, yeah. Or? Jerry, that's, I'm going to be in MISO, and we can cut the New Orleans one.
Yeah.
That one, it's okay to leave on Wednesday, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, because Thursday is just the board meeting.
I would think you could go on Monday and come back on Wednesday night.
Yeah. So then Thursday would work. And Friday would work.
Well,
it's... Friday. Oh, yeah.
How about this? Let's set the meeting for the 29th, okay? At 10 o'clock. Or do you want to have it a little later in case you end up with a late flight?
No, 10 is fine.
Okay, and then I'm showing a fairly clear calendar yet. We scheduled that meeting for Wednesday the 21st, that formal hearing. But how about if maybe on Thursday the 22nd, we would have our director's meeting?
Yep. And the budget update.
And yeah, we'll just jump as far as we'll schedule the budget update then, too.
I think we should put the budget update and the director's meetings together on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I agree.
Somehow kind of got off timing, and we had all these director meetings scheduled, and now we're catching up as we go with the budget meetings. So that's the long-term goal, though, you're right. So the 22nd, do you prefer the afternoon or morning?
Well, there's a 1:30 online docketing project meeting that day here in this room, so we should probably do the morning. Ten?
10 o'clock budget meeting and 11 o'clock director meeting.
I think you'd do 10:30, couldn't you? Do 10:30. The budget meeting won't take an hour. If we're doing those every month, it won't take us an hour to go through it.
Yeah, we had been scheduling half-hour meetings for the budget meeting, unless you wanted more time.
Yeah.
Which we said maybe later on as it gets closer to end of biennium, moving it to an hour, but
I'd prefer to keep it.
Okay, so March 22nd at 10 will be budget, and at 10:30... be directors. And the 29th at 10 is the directors meeting. And
no, the commission meeting.
The commission meeting. Yep. And so then we just need to do our February and April budget meetings yet.
Can we just add those a half an hour before the scheduled directors meetings and call it good?
That's what I'm hoping. I just want to.
So the February.
If there's some problem with it. When is the February?
The 27th at 1:30.
Yeah. So we'll have the budget meeting on February 27th at 1.
Okay. And then in April, it's. The director's meeting is Tuesday, April 24th at 3 o'clock p.m.
So you could do it at 2:30.
Yeah, I remember we have that late because of I'll be coming back from SPP. So we might have to move it later once it gets time to make flight arrangements. But for now, let's schedule it at 2:30.
On what day again?
April 24th.
I have some folks coming at noon today, so we can try to get these wrapped up by then, the scheduling piece.
Okay. The work session for Foxtail.
Okay. I've got some dates from Zach.
Was this that long list you sent to me yesterday?
As I'm looking at the dates, the 22nd might be a little soon for me. How about the 31st, but that is an agenda day.
31st of?
January.
It's not even on this list that you sent me.
What?
There's a whole bunch of dates on this list you sent me, but the 31st of January isn't one of them.
I gave you an email, right?
Yeah. You have the 29th and the 30th, and then it jumps to February 5th.
Oh, did I give you the email from Zach?
Yeah.
This is Brian for Foxtail.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So the 31st?
Yeah, which is an agenda day, I think, right?
Yes.
You mean a commission meeting?
Yeah.
So the 22nd is out for you, Jerry?
It's not out, but 16. I'm gone the week before and trying to I'd be in a better position to have a draft order for you on the 31st, but if the draft order's not done...
I don't think we have to have it.
Yeah, then the 22nd is fine.
I think we should just talk through what's come in because they've filed all their things and...
Yep.
Let's just do it on the 22nd.
Works for me.
Okay.
22nd is
Monday. The 22nd. Does that work for you guys?
Not in the morning.
Okay.
But like right after, early afternoon would.
That's fine.
1:30?
Either.
Let's
1:30.
Do 1:30.
Okay.
So January 22nd. At 1:30.
Okay.
Okay, number four, the work session on NCODA Ag Products.
And that was the other list that I had given
Zach.
You from Zach. And okay.
I'll rule the first couple out from my perspective. The 11th and the 12th are out.
Okay, 15th and 16th are out for me. The 18th is a Thursday. I think you guys were talking about having commission meetings or something.
Are we talking January?
Yeah, never mind. The 18th, Thursday, I could do the afternoon. Or the 19th, morning only.
Either one of those works for me.
Yeah, me too.
So should we...
We have the docketing meeting on the 18th.
Oh, yeah.
What day did you say again?
18th and 19th.
I cannot.
22nd?
Hold on.
The 18th does... I'm out.
So the 19th, the morning of the 19th?
Still out.
22nd is next on my list.
22nd, now I'm booked up with that other, whatever we just did there.
Foxtail went at 1:30.
23rd in the afternoon.
Nope. Mm-hmm. And I'm gone the rest of that week.
29th and 30th, and you're out. February 5th.
Wait, the 29th and 30th?
Yeah.
That week I'm back.
29th and 30th?
Yeah, I'm here.
So start with 29th.
I'm open.
No, I'll be at SPP those days.
Both?
30th, Tuesday in the afternoon.
You're still at SPP, I'm assuming.
Yep.
You're on
well,
June.
Until I, and then I'm scheduled to get, I think I get in like at
budget in the
1:30 or 2, and then we have our
okay
budget meeting.
February 5th.
Let's go back to the 20, I could call in.
When?
On those, say like the 20, that the 20, not the 23rd, but the 24th, the morning of the 23rd, I could do it. And then the 24th, I could call in.
Well, the 24th wasn't one of Zach's days.
No, 24th isn't there.
Okay.
The 23rd, the afternoon.
Okay. And I'm going to be on a plane in the afternoon. Okay. So none of those dates, like the 24th, 25th, 26th, that's not an option?
That's not on Zach's list.
No. Oh, okay. No. Sorry.
So the 5th?
I'm open.
Monday the 5th?
Yep.
Jerry, I'm good.
1 o'clock?
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, we already did number 5, that NSP hearing. Number 6, the NSP ADP on the 1,550 megawatts.
I don't need a work session on that. I don't know if anybody else does or we've had one.
I had Brian and I talked, and I was going to distribute an order accepting the settlement for you to review and then have a work session afterwards, but you said you don't want one.
Why? I just don't need one, so.
Randy, you want one?
Well, I want to see the order.
I'll send it
the
around
order,
right away.
The order will just
here.
Say we accept the settlement.
It just accepts the settlement, which basically gives them an ADP on the wind.
Yeah.
been off my radar screen. I'm not.
When was this hearing? October?
It's been a while. We had one work session already.
We can schedule outside of a scheduling meeting. So if I need a work session, we'll schedule it in the coming days. We won't wait 2 weeks. But
yeah, draft an order, get the order around.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Okay, so I'll distribute that order, and then I'll wait to hear if you want a work session.
Okay. So we'll move to number 7, the all those things, that long list.
That was all of the things we talked about, having a work session just to make sure that the commission is on board with the issues that we're going to put in the notice. It's kind of a question of what do you see coming out of this proceeding, I guess.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started to look, and the ramifications are...
Didn't we set the dates? No.
Mm-hmm. We had the hearing we do on this for today? The 7th. The hearing.
Oh, we've got it reserved.
The 7th of March.
Yeah.
And so if we can get this work session, whatever is good for you guys is good for us.
Well, that'll have to be, I mean, what do we need, 6 weeks to get the notice out?
We need that notice to go out, you know, by the end of this month.
Yeah.
And
so we've got to have a work session in the next couple of weeks, like this week. What is today, Wednesday?
Let's go March 7th. So we have 5 full weeks in February. We have 1, so we'd have to back up to the no later than, say, the 23rd or even 22nd. In fact, just to be safe, it would almost have to be this week or next week.
We're probably too close on putting it out on the notice out on the next agenda, which was the 31st.
Oh, we
will. So we might have to go to the special meeting to make that. But I think there's a possibility that one might be coming along anyway.
So the 17th, 18th, or 19th, are any of those dates open?
17th, I'm gone. 18th in the afternoon, I would be available. And the 19th. We didn't take
you're all in the 18th doesn't work for you, though, Brian, right?
Yeah.
18th and 19th don't work for Brian. Are we working? Do we work on a Martin Luther King Day? Are we open?
No.
The 16th?
The 16th, I'm
after that, Petroleum Council? Okay.
I'm out the 16th and 17th, part of the 17th.
The 22nd? Well, Randy, you're tied up.
I already know.
The morning of the 23rd doesn't work.
No.
We were going through these same dates.
Well, what about, like, late tomorrow?
I'm leaving in the morning.
Oh, yeah, so my tomorrow afternoon. Gosh. Well.
And Friday, you said the 12th doesn't. Did someone have a conflict with Friday the 12th?
Yeah, we're in Texas. Aren't you? That's tomorrow. That's this Friday. So the 13th doesn't work. The 14th does not work. Wait. The 15th doesn't work. 16th? No.
No.
17th?
No.
The 18th?
Afternoon.
I think
Brian was leaving.
Yeah, the 18th and 19th do not work for me.
Yeah.
Jerry, could you call in on the 18th? Is that feasible from dialysis?
Yep.
In the morning? Does the morning work of the 18th, Brian, or do you leave?
No, I'll be out of town.
What was the thing we scheduled on the 22nd?
About the budget update.
And Foxtail.
Oh, I'm sorry. Foxtail work session.
You know, is there room to squeeze an hour into the 22nd somewhere?
I'm open on the 22nd, so. Morning earlier?
Is that Foxtail, how long is that expected to take?
I guess probably an hour, maybe less. Or
I don't think so. Do you want a 12:30? Are you leaving at 2:30? Are you out that day?
Let's move Foxtail up to 1 o'clock if we could.
Okay.
And do this NSP one at 2:15.
2 o'clock?
2:15.
Yeah, maybe just leave a little.
2:15.
Okay.
Okay.
A few minutes to go over. I might not be able to stay for it, but there's just there's not a chance where we're all going to be together.
That's why I suggested 2, because I know you're trying to get out of town.
Yeah, let's do it at 2. And you. Or why don't we do it 12:30? Or is that morning available? You guys are tied up in the morning?
I got something morning. Okay, yeah, let's do the NSP one at 2 o'clock.
NSP at 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
And Foxtail at 1.
I think, quite honestly, if you're going to run short of time, I don't think you should run short of time on the NSP thing. I would do, let's do that one first. Which at one? 1, and then do the Foxtail at 2. And then if you have to leave a little early, then it's a hearing that you've sat through the whole thing. So you've got, you know, I think it would be more important to.
Probably a good idea. Okay, so NSP is at 1 o'clock on the 22nd, Foxtail at 2 o'clock. Everybody good with that?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Okay, and then CenturyLink, last but not least. So it doesn't sound like it's going to be in January.
No.
Unless somebody's been holding out on us.
May looks good.
The first week of February, the 5th? What was?
He said May looks good.
Oh, May. I'm sorry.
Nobody explained this to me.
Were you guys gone that week? I can't remember. The 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th?
The 6th, I'm out.
At 1 p.m. on the 5th, we had the Minkota Ag work session.
Yeah, the 5th is good for me.
I'm good on the 5th. No, so would you like 11?
Keeping in mind that we have Minkota Ag in the afternoon.
Right.
Yeah. Could we do it in the morning?
10 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
Because I got a feeling that could take some time.
So 10 a.m. on the 5th.
And I just have a quick question for Alana. If we get into updates on where they were at with the settlement work and so forth, do we need to include the case number from that case?
Yes, okay. I would include it. It's impossible, I think, to have the conversation.
Yeah. Later. I'll make sure to get that to Amy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Does that conclude all of our scheduling?
The only other comment I have on the Petroleum Council, they want to change the time to 11. Would that be a conflict for anybody?
Remind me the date again. Is that next week?
It's the 16th.
I thought the agenda looked good, by the way. It seems a little bit long, like optimistic to get through all of that. But I can't. I have
it at 11:30 then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can do that. Ron Ness was looking at flying out, but he'll have to leave early anyway, so that's fine.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
We're adjourned.